It is said that we strive for an age of peace. This is what mankind aspires to. This is good. This is right. This is moral. But there have been times in our history when men relate stories of men who did glorious things, when there was nothing left to do but fight. I am not performing the task as your narrator to glorify a fight nor to sing the song of hate. But there comes a time when man uses the battle as a last resort. He fights because fighting is the immediate and essential means to an end. And from the ranks comes a special breed of man, disciplined, well-trained, mobile, prepared. He has been called Uncle Sam Scout, the can opener of the Army. He is a man proud of his tradition, his history. He belongs to the finest military organization in the world. He is a United States Marine. Many years of experience in peace and war, the United States Marine Corps has developed many traditions. Traditions of devotion to duty, self-sacrifice, versatility, and dependability. Traditions of loyalty to country and to Corps. Traditions of uniform, insignia, and equipment. Since the American Revolution, generations of Marines have maintained and perpetuated these traditions. The Marine learns that his traditions are as much a part of his equipment as his pack, his weapon, or his ammunition. Pride of person is instilled in every Marine. But the making of a Marine is not alone a matter of smart appearance, of drill, and of discipline. Of greater importance, he learns to know his equipment and how to use it so that he is ready to meet any emergency that may arise. And to report, the Marines have landed, and the situation is well in hand. Anchor, adopted in the year of 1868, embodies the tradition of worldwide service and sea tradition. The spread eagle, symbol of the nation itself, holds in its beak a streamer upon which is inscribed the famous motto of the United States Marines, Semper Fidelis, which means in Latin, always faithful. The term leatherneck is supplied to Marines as widely used, but few people associate it with the uniform. The fact that the United States Marine wore a black leather stock or collar from 1798 until 1880 may have given rise to the name. According to tradition, the stock was originally worn to protect the jugular vein from the slash of a saber or cutlass. The sword with a Mameluke hilt, presented to Lieutenant Presley N. O'Bannon of the Marine Corps by a former Pasha of Tripoli, became the symbol of authority of the Marine Corps officers for more than 100 years. It symbolized the exploits of O'Bannon and his Marines on the shore of Tripoli in 1805, an episode climaxed by the raising of the American flag for the very first time in the old world. The use of fighting men as part of the regular complement of ships of war was common to the Phoenicians and to all the maritime states of Greece at least five centuries before the Christian era. The marines of that day had definite tactical missions, first to fight in naval engagements, defending the bulwarks of their own ships and conducting boarding parties against the ships of the enemy. Second, to capture and hold the land approaches of a harbor when it was necessary for the fleet to put into port in some strange country. And third, to enable the fleet to strike a blow on land by means of a raiding party or a small compact offensive force. The custom of using fighting soldiers aboard ships coming down from the Greeks and Romans was continued in the British fleet, but not until the year of 1664, during the reign of Charles II, was there any military organization placed under authority of the British Admiralty. This was accomplished by an order in council in October of 1664, which directed the organization of the Admiral's Maritime Regiment in deference to the Duke of York and Albany, whose title was Lord High Admiral of England. The regiment was designated later as Regiment of Marines, and in case of war, was first to embark with a fleet for service afloat. The words come down to us from Rudyard Kipling. "And after I met him over the world a-doing all kinds of things, like landing hisself with a Gatling gun to talk to them heathen kings. He sleeps in a hammock instead of a cot, and he drills with the deck of a slough, and he sweats like a jolly, Her Majesty's jolly, soldier and sailor too. But there isn't a job on the top of the earth a beggar don't know nor do. You can leave him at night on a bald man's head to paddle his own canoe. He's a sort of a blooming cosmopol, soldier and sailor too." Colonial Marines came into existence early in the year of 1740 when three regiments of Marines were raised in the American colonies, concurrently with the reestablishment of the British Marines for service in naval operations in the West Indies, with the fleet under the command of Admiral Edward Vernon of the Royal Navy. Native Americans were supposedly better fitted for the service in this climate than Europeans, and their uniforms of camlet coats, brown linen waistcoats, and canvas trousers were considered well adapted for their duties. On April 2nd, in the year of 1740, the King commissioned Alexander Spotswood, former governor of the colony of Virginia, a colonel, to be the commandant of the entire organization of American Marines. After the death of Colonel Spotswood, in June of 1740, the force of Marines was formed into a single regiment of four battalions under the command of Colonel William Cooch of Virginia, generally referred to as Gooch's Marines. It ranked in the British Army as 43rd in regiment formation. One of the officers of the American Marines was Lawrence Washington, the half-brother of George Washington. The reestablishment of the British Marines, the creation of the first American Marines, and their joint Caribbean service more than two centuries ago is commemorated by both services in their mutual use of the colors of crimson and gold. An An organization of Marines as a regular branch of our country's service was formed by an act of the Continental Congress passed on November 10th in the year of 1775. The Continental Marines, though few in number, performed notable service during the American Revolutionary War. With the naval forces, they made several expeditions to the Bahamas, served with the lake fleets of the Continental Navy, and in operations on Lake Champlain, with John Paul Jones and with the navies of the several states, and with Washington's army in the battles of Princeton. Following the close of the war, they, like the Navy, went out of existence. The Marine Corps, as it exists today, was formed by an act on July 11, 1798, at the beginning of the naval war with France. The Marines took part in that war from 1798 to the year of 1801, and in the war with the Barbary Corsairs from 1801 to 1805. They took an active part in the War of 1812, serving aboard practically all American warships which engaged the enemy, with the Army in the Battle of Bladensburg, August 1814, and with Jackson at New Orleans. In 1824, Marines formed part of a landing force which operated against a nest of pirates in Cuba. In 1832, Marines again saw action against pirates, this time as part of a combined landing force from the United States frigate Potomac to punish the Malay pirates at Kuala Batu, an island of Sumatra, for the capture and plunder of a United States vessel, the USS Friendship. In 1833, Marines from the Boston Navy Yard suppressed a mutiny in the Massachusetts State Prison, which was beyond the control of civil authorities. And during 1836 and 1837, they helped the Army fight the Creek and Seminole Indians in Georgia and Florida, where they served under the Commandant, Colonel Archibald Henderson. During the war with Mexico and in the conquest of California, the Marines took an important part both on the Atlantic and Pacific coasts, assisting in the capture of Monterrey, Yerba Buena, San Francisco, Veracruz, Tampico, and Tabasco. Their conduct at Los Angeles, San Diego, San Gabriel merited the commendation of Commodore Shubrick. The battalion of Marines marched with General Scott to Mexico City, participating in the final attack at the castle at Chapultepec, in the march to the National Palace, the halls of Montezuma. This explains the words for many years inscribed on the colors of the Corps, from Tripoli to the halls of Montezuma. The words are commemorated today in the first two lines of the Marines' hymn, although the unknown author of the words of the first verse shifted the chronology when he wrote from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli. During the Civil War, United States Marines served afloat and ashore. They took an active part in all the more important naval operations, those on the Gulf of the Mississippi, the operations leading to the capture of New Orleans, and also against the coastal defenses on the Atlantic seaboard, culminating in the last big operation of the war, the capture of Fort Fisher. They also took part in a number of land engagements, including the fight on July 21st, 1861, which was known in the North as Bull Run, and in the South, as Manassas. A noteworthy incident at the beginning of the Civil War was the participation of Marines in the capture of John Brown and the suppression of the uprising and riot at Harper's Ferry. The peacetime activities of the Marine Corps from the close of the Civil War until the war with Spain were in accordance with the Marines' tradition of versatility. They aided the civil authorities in suppressing labor riots in Baltimore and Philadelphia and enforcing the revenue laws in New York. At the same time, they sent expeditions to the Caribbean area, Korea, China, and other foreign countries for the purpose of protecting American lives and property. During the years of 1867 and 1870, they formed part of the Formosa expedition. A year later, in what was then termed the most important action since the Civil War, a battalion of Marines as part of a naval brigade led the advance against the Korean forts in reprisal for serious offenses against Americans. In 1882, a detachment of Marines landed at Alexandria, Egypt, to assist in restoring order. In the war with Spain, the Marines again were first to land in the enemy territory. It was in Cuba, and they served on the larger ships with Admirals Dewey and Sampson in the battles of Manila Bay and the naval battle of Santiago de Cuba. Following the spectacular naval victory in the Manila Bay, the Marines of the cruiser Baltimore, under the command of First Lieutenant Dion Williams, United States Marine Corps, landed to take the Spanish naval arsenal at Cavite. And from then on, the Marines garrisoned the station. Not long after the war with Spain, a Marine brigade was sent to the Far East, where it helped to suppress the Philippine insurrection. Notable among the Marine Corps activities in the Philippines was their participation in the Battle of Novaleta and the ill-fated expedition across the island of Samar. Shortly after the Mexican War, the United States Marines carried the so-called Tripoli Montezuma flag, which had the motto, by land, by sea. And when the present Marine Corps emblem was adopted in the year of 1868, the Navy Department authorized the use of the words on the flag of the United States Marine Corps. The present motto, Semper Fidelis, replaced by sea and land on streamers above the eagle soon after the Civil War, and was officially adopted as the motto in the year of 1880. The march, Semper Fidelis, was composed by the late John Philip Sousa in the year of 1888, during the time that he was leader of the United States Marine Band. We'll be right back. Although no historical reason is assigned to the red stripe on the outer seams of the trousers worn by officers and non-commissioned officers of the Corps, adopted shortly after the Mexican War, tradition has it that the red stripe commemorates the bloody Battle of Chapultepec. In the famous blue uniform of the Marine Corps, which was first authorized by Secretary of War James McHenry in August of 1797, just prior to the formal establishment of the Marine Corps on July 11, 1798, are incorporated many of the traditions of the Corps. Blue, or navy blue, an inconspicuous color at sea and employed generally by the naval forces of all countries, was selected by the United States Marines for their uniforms, while the pattern and trimmings of red and gold served at the same time to make them distinctive. And although the red edging or piping on the blouse was used primarily for its decorative effect, it will be remembered that John Paul Jones dressed his Marines in red uniforms, and it's quite possible that sentiment played its part. In view of the fact that the early organization, duties, and regulations of the American Marines were patterned somewhat after the ways and customs of their forerunners, the British Marines, it's possible that the traditional red of the British uniform had its effect in the adoption of red for the uniform of the United States Marines. In other action, there had been plenty. During the Boxer Rebellion in China in the summer of 1900, Marines from ships on the Asiatic Station took part in the defense of the legation quarter at Peking, and a regiment of Marines formed part of the Allied relief expedition from Taku to Peking, as well as participating in the Battle of Tientsin. A very interesting and unique tradition of friendship between the 23rd British Foot, the Royal Welsh Fusiliers, and the United States Marine Corps had its inception in this campaign. During the course of the desperate fighting at the walls of Tientsin, each of these two famous organizations was supported by or came to the assistance of the other on a number of occasions. The conspicuous service rendered by each organization resulted in mutual admiration. St. David's Day, which is March 1st, is marked annually by cabled greetings to each other, messages which contain only the ancient Welsh password and St. David. In 1903, Marines were landed in Santo Domingo and Korea, while a detail of Marines served as guards for a diplomatic mission to Abyssinia by camel caravan across the desert. From 1906 to 1908, the Marines participated in the Army of Occupation in the Cuban Pacification, a number of expeditions to Panama and Nicaragua from 1909 to 1912, and 1914, the expedition to Veracruz, Mexico. And then, World War I. In the First World War, the Marines did the hardest fighting in their history up to that time. The 4th Brigade of Marines, composed of the famous 5th and 6th Regiments and the 6th Machine Gun Battalion, served as one of the infantry brigades of the 2nd American Division, participating with distinction in the important battles of Belleau Wood, Blancmont Ridge, and Saint-Mihiel, and of course, the Argonne. At Belleau Wood in June of 1918, the Marines of the 4th Brigade fought with such ferocity that the Germans in their official reports referred to them as Tüfelhunden, devil dogs, a fighting name that has increased in popularity with the passing of time. Marine aviation units under the command of Major Alfred A. Cunningham, who became the Marine Corps' first aviator in 1912, rendered conspicuous service as the day wing of the Northern Bombing Group in Northern France and Belgium. The Marine pilots flew 57 bombing missions, dropping 52,000 pounds of bombs and shooting down at least a dozen German planes. The 1st Marine Aeronautic Company, under command of Major Francis T. Evans, operated an anti-submarine patrol station in the Azores from January of 1918 to January 1919. Major Evans, in 1917, was the first to loop a seaplane, a feat thought impossible at that time. Please press fast forward. Let side one expire. Turn cassette over for part two of From the Halls of Montezuma. In 1941, Marine units were stationed halfway around the world, and approximately 2,000 Marines were serving in China and the Philippines under the command of the Commander-in-Chief of the Asiatic Fleet. The 4th Regiment was stationed in Shanghai with detachments in Peking and Tientsin, North China, and two detachments on Oglapao and Cavite in the Philippines. In addition, several thousand Marines were serving at naval stations in the Hawaiian Islands, Guam, Wake, Midway, American Samoa, the Panama Canal Zone, and Cuba. The 1st Provisional Marine Brigade, taken largely from the 2nd Marine Division at San Diego, was on duty in Iceland, and Provisional Marine Companies were stationed on various islands in the Atlantic, the Caribbean. When the Japanese struck in the Pacific, the Marines from the stations in China had been successfully withdrawn to the Philippines with the exception of the Marine detachments at Peking and Tientsin in North China. The 4th Marines and two Marine garrisons regularly stationed in the Philippines participated in the defense of Bataan and Corregidor until the American forces were finally overpowered and captured by the Japanese. The handful of Marines on Guam put up a heroic but futile defense. Marines on Wake Island made a gallant stand, the details of which are familiar to American people. In Hawaii, an aviation group considered one of the best fighting outfits then possessed by United States forces tried in vain to hold off the Japanese raid. Immediately after the Japanese attack in 1941, additional Marines with defense battalion equipment were sent out from the United States to reinforce the Hawaiian Islands. The 7th Defense Battalion of Marines had been stationed at American Samoa since March of 1941 and had taken some steps toward fortifying the harbor at Pago Pago. As further reinforcements for this important position, a brigade of Marines, the 2nd, taken mostly from the 2nd Marine Division at San Diego, was formed together with a small aviation unit succeeded and preceding that January. An additional brigade of Marines, the 3rd, was organized from units of the 1st. This brigade took up the organized positions on the islands and with naval units established important air and naval facilities. And now the Marines were prepared to fight. Navy and Army had repeatedly turned back strong Japanese thrusts designed to secure a hold on the Australian continent. In order to secure the line of communication to the Southwest Pacific, the 1st Marine Division was sent to New Zealand in June of 1942. Even before the rear echelon arrived in New Zealand, Major General Alexander A. Vandergrift was notified that his division was to carry out a landing attack at Guadalcanal. After winning this battle, which was used as the first stepping stone to Tokyo, the forces moved up the Solomon Ladder and seized bases in the New Georgia Islands. Army and Marine Corps units had landed on the Russell Islands in February of 1943, which gave the Marines and Army an air base for operations. In June and July of 43, Marine Corps and Army troops landed on New Georgia and Rendova Islands, followed by landings at Velilavella, Arundel, and the other islands in the Georgia chain. After the seizure of Bougainville, the Allied offensive against Japan was intensified. Army forces accelerated their leapfrog tactics up the north coast of New Guinea, and our Central Pacific forces breached the Japanese outer line of defense when on November 20th, 1943, the 2nd Marine Division landed on Tarawa, and elements of the Army 7th Division went ashore on Makin Island, both in the Gilbert's group. Next came the Marshalls, the Marianas, the Palus, the Philippines. came Iwo Jima. In the final great land battle of the Pacific area, the invasion of Okinawa, the Marine Corps was represented by the 1st, 2nd, 6th Marine Divisions, which formed the 3rd Amphibious Corps. The 3rd Corps, with the 1st and 6th Marine Divisions in assault and the 2nd in reserve, began landing on the western beaches of Okinawa on April 1st, 1945. By June 7th, the 1st Marine Division had advanced its lines to within 200 yards of the west coast north of a town, a move which cut off escape for the enemy forces in the vicinity. During the night of June 17th, 18th, units of the 8th Marines, 2nd Marine Division, relieved the 7th Marines on the Kunishi Ridges. On June 21st, the announcement was made that organized enemy resistance on Okinawa had ended, and that the first conquest of the Japanese soil was completed. The successful conquest of Okinawa enabled our ships, planes, and submarines to tighten the blockade around Japan's home islands and sever her vital sea links to the Asiatic mainland and the areas to the south. With the end of the Okinawa campaign, the bombing attacks upon Japan were stepped up, which together with our submarines and ships further weakened the ability to wage war. Finally, the 14th of August, the war was to end. On the 27th and 28th of August in 1945, the fleet inaugurated the first step in the occupation program, and Marines landed. On September 2nd, 1945, in a brief but solemn ceremony aboard the battleship Missouri, representatives of Japan signed the surrender documents. Thereafter, Allied occupation of Japan and the territory under Japanese control went steadily ahead, with the United States Marines playing an important role. And then came the 1950s and Korea. And then came Vietnam. And the Marines once again turned to fighting, the immediate and essential means to an end. And once again from the ranks came that special breed of man. I met him all over the world doing all kinds of things, like landing himself with a Gatling gun to talk to them heathen kings. He sleeps in an hammock instead of a cot and drills with a duck on a slough. And he sweats like a jolly, Your Majesty's jolly, soldier and sailor too. But there isn't a job on the top of the earth that beggar don't know nor do. You can leave him at night on a bald man's head to paddle his own canoe. He's a sort of bloomin' cosmopol, soldier and sailor too. With the help of God and a few Marines is a phrase that has been attributed to nearly every naval hero, from John Paul Jones to Admiral Halsey. And it fits. It describes 100 instances in which the honor of the United States has been upheld beyond the seas. And it somehow expresses the very spirit of the United States Marine Corps. But perhaps it is best said in a story from World War I. They told the story of some distinguished visitors who were passing along the cots in a military hospital in France. On one of these cots lay a man, quite still, with his face buried in the pillow. Something about him caused one of the visitors to remark, "I think this must be an American soldier." And from the depths of the pillow came a muffled voice, "Hell no, I'm a Marine."